Hello, hello. Okay. Hi, guys. How's it going out there? This is Carol Martori, and it's Doc Talk. We're going to talk about all things documentary today. And basically, today is Making Truth with Fragments of Reality. And we're going to try to explore how we make docs and what it even means to try to make a truth with these fragments and these pieces of pictures and sounds and moving images. I found a really great blog post just that speaks to this from Patch Theater. This was written January 27th, 2012. We make sense from the fragments. I'm going to read part of this to you. Nothing is more basic to the process of human thinking than how we divide everything into oppositions between one thing and another. We orient ourselves to the world by speaking of up or down, left or right, hot or cold, future or past, good or bad, light or dark, alive or dead. So fundamental is this dualism of the way our consciousness works that we are scarcely aware of the omnipresent part it plays in our thinking. We use such dualities in establishing our own identities, in sensing our own difference from others. We are male or female, tall or short, this religion or that. It gives us a sense of where we fit in, but also a sense of our own uniqueness. This duality lies at the heart of all stories, which it seems are designed to guide us towards a point where opposites can become reconciled or transcended. Stories bring that which is unbalanced and incomplete into a state of balance and completeness, not somewhere between the two extremes, but usually to some third position that transcends them both. So that's, you know, what we all do. We try to create meanings out of these little bits and pieces that we sense and pick up and document and weave them into a whole and try to attempt to make that something larger than the parts, you know, something more gestalt in a sense. There's a really great film out by Laurie Anderson called Heart of a Dog. It just hit iTunes, and I'm going to play the trailer for you right now. Hang on, guys. It's just going to take 1 second. Here we go.
This is my dream body. The one I used to walk around in my dreams. In this dream, I'm in a hospital bed. The doctor is holding a small pink bundle. And wrapped in the bundle, I see the little face of my dog, a small rat terrier named Lolabelle. I kissed her on the head, and I said, I'll love you forever. To live in the gap between the moment that is expiring and the one that is arising. And when you close your eyes, what do you see? Nothing. Now open them.
Introduction to that film and that powerful last sentence about the purpose of death, and she weaves this really interesting and textured story, And we're going to get into a bigger chunk of that later on in a second here. But basically, I want to talk a little bit about the background of documentary and what is it, because today I feel like it has transformed so much from its original state, and this whole notion, idea of representing truth and what does that mean and how do we do that. You know, we live in this society today. I just find myself, you know, scrolling through the phone. We're all scrolling and we're reading and looking at photos and listening to bits and pieces of music and dialogue and news. And it's this constant ingestion of images, words, sights, sounds, you know, and ideas. And particularly during this election year, when there's so much media and so many people trying to convince us of this idea or that, or this candidate or that, or this story or that, framing truth, framing reality, giving us answers for the future. It is, you know, it's a bit overwhelming, but this is how we live our lives, and we live a life of fragments, and we ourselves are constantly trying to make sense of that. Even on the drive over here today, I drove through my neighborhood of Silver Lake, through Echo Park, through downtown into Chinatown, and then I happened upon this procession, this Catholic procession of these people marching in the street with upholding this beautiful statue of Mary, chanting and singing, you know, leading up to in the week leading up to Easter. And you know, you get these sights, these sounds, these different cultures you're passing through, particularly in a big city, this wonderful, big, beautiful city of LA, going from one neighborhood to the next, one culture to the next. What does it all mean? How do we ground ourselves? How do we pay attention and ignore at the same time and weave the everyday meaning of truth and reality? And how do we do that as documentary filmmakers? Where does it even come from? John Grierson, who was a famous documentarian from Scotland, he is the person who coined the term documentary. And he shot, you know, he was one of the first people to shoot real people in real situations in the 1930s in a real environment. He believed that that is what documentary should be, something what we think of as verite film. And his whole thing was he wanted to give people a glimpse of other people's lives, which contrasts to, you know, everyday modern society for other people, you know, give people like a understanding what it means to live in another person's shoes, essentially. And that at that point in the 1930s hadn't been available. So, you know, imagine this time when you were not able to see other neighborhoods, other cultures, other people, and how they lived and what they did and how they loved and made sense of the world. So he's trying to say, hey, this is important, and we should give people a glimpse into this for the very first time. Now we have just like a blast of it, you know, a fire hydrant blast of it every day just through our phone, you know. And that was a time where they didn't have access to that. And he goes on to say genre is important in documentary. Documentary makers today, you know, have to figure out what's the format for distribution. Is it going to be TV? Is it going to be the web? Is it going to be theatrical? You know, do I put it in a series? Is it a one-off? Is it short? Is it long? So many different ways to even just frame reality. In Britain, where, you know, where he was from also too, is all about journalism, investigative journalism. And we talked a little bit about that last time I was here, and people, you know, kind of against a little bit of that investigative tradition today, trying to expand the genre of documentary, and move it beyond some of these foundational rules and traditions. Part of that is about creativity, and a lot of arguments today are about the balance of creativity in a documentary. And this is because what happens is problems arise of authenticity the more creative the documentary is. It's a, you know, it can run into trouble because it can run away from its focus and from truth. So, but then again, does it ever have that? You have, like I said, I've talked about before, the ability to frame, the ability to cut, the ability to weave together scenes and sequences. So Laurie Anderson is someone who has really, really embraced the creative and this really interesting way of presenting ideas and truths and philosophies. I'm going to go into a little bit some discussion from the documentarian Jill Godmillow. And she's in conversation with Ann Louise Shapiro, who is a professor, and they talk a little bit about how real is the reality in documentary film. And Ann Louise Shapiro asks Jill Godmillow, how comfortable are you using the label documentary? You know, this thing that in the 1930s, John Grierson labeled. Filming everyday reality, filming everyday life, putting those scenes together to show a public who wasn't familiar with that. Okay, that was how it started. So here they're having this conversation in the late 90s. And Jill says, I do use the term documentary for convenience, but I hate it. Why? Because everybody thinks they know what the term means. Because everybody has seen some television programs labeled documentary. Neither television white papers, that is so-called objective journalistic presentations of social problems, or history programs that chronicle certain social movements, or portraits of famous artists or historical figures and the like. Unconsciously embedded in these forms called documentary is the conceit of the real, which substantiates the truth claims made by these films. These general notions about documentary film produce a fairly limited understanding of what nonfiction cinema can be and do. They certainly don't encompass any of my recent work. I should say at the start that I am way out on the fringe of documentary filmmaking. You're not talking to someone who's in a central or mainstream position. And I would say the same of Laurie Anderson. I have actually spent a lot of time trying to figure out what to call the kind of work I do. I've been looking for a label to replace documentary that would include, besides the kind of films I produce, all the films that make some kind of claim to represent a real, not fictional world, and that do not contain performances by professional actors, but by social actors, that is, everything but scripted drama. So we're talking about a category that could include propaganda films the CIA produces for export abroad, television's hard copy, CBS reports, Robert Flaherty's Nanook of the North, Luis Buñuel's Land Without Bread, Trinh Minh Ha's Reassemblage, Ken Burns' 18-hour baseball series, Claude Lanzmann's Shoah, Frederick Wiseman's Hospital, the films of the contemporary German filmmaker Haroun Faruqi, Soon Friedrich's feminist films, Raoul Ruiz's early nonfiction work, George Franju's Blood of the Beasts, Barbara Kopple's feature-length Academy Award-winning labor dramas, and the work of certain American avant-garde filmmakers such as Bruce Conner's, just for examples. How can they all be in one class? We have to think about that. We're talking about a wide range of films and filmmakers that she just lists off. And they're all under documentary. So for those of you who may know these films or these filmmakers, you know, it's like mind-blowing when you think about that list. Okay, for those of you who don't, feel free to like find out a little bit more about them and, you know, seek them out and look at them because it's in a mind-blowing list. And she goes on to say, I think they all exhibit a common defining trait inherent in their stance toward their audience is a claim not so much to educate, but to edify. I love that. Not so much to educate, but to edify. So I like to call this huge class of films, films of edification or edifiers. At least this label avoids the classic truth claims of documentary and acknowledges the intention to persuade and to elevate, to raise up the audience, to more sophisticated or refined notion of what is. Okay, this is similar to that discussion on fragments. We weave all these distinct fragments and dualities together to make something that is greater than that, those parts, to raise it up, to elevate. How else could Barbara, she goes on to say, how else could Barbara Kopple's Made in America, a totally narrativized documentary that dramatizes the closing of Hormel meatpacking plant in Minnesota into a tearful epic tragedy, sit in the same category as Ken Burns' Civil War, a nostalgic compilation film fashioned out of preformed actual artifacts, period music, period photos, period letters, home from the front, and on-camera expert speculations by American historians. When I teach documentary film, I actually insist that we use my new name. In fact, I play a game with my students. When they slip and say documentary in my class, they have to bring the beer to the next screening. It's just a consciousness training game to keep us from making unconscious assumptions about the form. Better than documentary is the label nonfiction, but it's tainted too. It's a term built on a concept of something not being something else, implying that because it's not fiction, it's true. When I made my film Far From Poland in 1984, I anticipated that I was going to have trouble getting it into documentary film festivals, and I did. Far From Poland is a feature-length nonfiction film about the Polish Solidarity Movement shot entirely in the United States, containing a total of 5 minutes of actuality footage supplied by the Solidarity Press Agency. It combines reenactments of certain texts, soap opera-like interventions, interviews, speculations, formal devices, and some clearly marked imaginary history. In the press release, I called the film a dramatary, to indicate that it's not what's considered a classic documentary, but not a fiction film either. I was trying to skirt the odious word docudrama, which it decidedly wasn't, and to call up a certain awkward two-humped beast for imagery. So this notion of we want to portray truth, we want to edify, we want to persuade, to elevate, to raise up, to weave a tale of something more than its parts, to have people to think about real meaning of certain events and connect things together, perhaps a cause and effect, have you, but utilizing all kinds of tools, both fictional and non-fictional. What does that mean? What do we call those types of films? Is there a place for them? Is it documentary? Do we need another term? Is it just simply film? You know, are we in an era where it's beyond categorization? I kind of loved how Chris Rock called out in the Academy Awards in his opening, you know, monologue, why do we have male and female actors? Why do we have these different categories? It's not track and field. I thought that was great. And this maybe points to a situation where things are evolving as they always have been in film itself, in documentary itself. Why is it that only the fiction filmmakers are called out for the awards? Why is it that only the editors and cinematographers and sound mixers and composers of fiction film get the awards? It's strange to me. Are we going to continue to evolve? Are these forms and shapes going to continue to change and shift? Or do we still have a real meaningful place for documentary film, one that is solid and should continue to be? I'm going to play a 20-minute segment from Heart of a Dog. I think it's really, really great. I'm going to read first a little bit of the review from Manola Dargis, the New York Times review. And she says that Heart of a Dog is about telling and remembering and forgetting and how we put together the fragments that make up our lives, their flotsam and jetsam, highs and lows, meaningful and slight details, shrieking and weeping headline nudes, this purposely fissured quality extends to the movie itself, which is by turns narratively straightforward and playfully experimental, light and heavy. It's a fast 75 minutes, accessible and opaque, concrete and abstract. And while it's drizzled in sadness, one of its recurrent images is of rain splattered across glass. It joyfully embraces silliness, as when a blind dog named Lola Blail plays a piano. It's a home movie of a type, if one that, like a stone skipped across a still lake, leaves expanding rings in its path. It's a really beautiful film, beautifully done, and I'm sad you can only hear the audio because it's, you know, very layered, textured film, and she utilizes sound design and music and, you know, these beautiful visuals to a very poetic, meaningful, and very truthful pondering on life and the meaning of life, essentially. I'm going to play now some of that for you. Heart of a Dog by Laurie Anderson. Here we go, guys.
Took most of the time. And what happened?
And she had this brand new solution. Was the realization that Jesus Christ.
Thank you.
pilots have really good hearing, especially in the upper registers, and they never seem to get bored. Hey, let's listen to that shuttle tractor sound. Interested. It was so strange the way it happened. Almost overnight, there were soldiers everywhere in the city. Where there used to be just maybe one policeman, now there were groups of soldiers with machine guns and riot gear. Almost immediately, it became normal. They began to blend in. Nobody talked to them. But they were everywhere, like ghosts. And I thought, when did that start to happen? So Homeland Security began to breed dogs. When the puppies were 13 weeks old, they were sent to prisons to be trained by prisoners. Smallest dogs were drafted to work with police on patrols and on bomb-sniffing squads. The Homeland Security slogan, "If you see something, say something," sounds like something the Austrian philosopher Wittgenstein might say. And his books are full of cryptic sentences about logic and about how language has the power to actually create the world. If you can't talk about it, he says,
Thank you.
Kurt, who has the Austrian restaurant on the our neighbor Julian the painter who lives across the street, and lots of people who are total strangers to us. She had a tab in several stores, and in most walks she would drop in to pick up a treat.
Excerpt from Heart of a Dog from the amazing Laurie Anderson, a wry, wondrous, and unforgettable cinematic journey. And I would heartily agree with that. I think it's just a really beautifully narrated, I guess, story in a way. You're like really more on this journey. You're floating along sometimes in the POV of her dog Lolabelle, sometimes in her own mind, musings and insights into the world. These layers keep unfolding for you before your eyes. It's playful, it's sad, it's poignant, and it's really wonderful. And it feels, you know, as you watch it, very much like a home movie. A lot of the footage was shot by Anderson herself, and it's got that digital kind of like lo-fi a little bit quality, hearkening back from the late 90s mini DV mode, but still is HD format. So I don't know, it just has this great kind of graininess to it, but not like film graininess, like digital graininess. I don't know if that makes any sense, but we're gonna flow with it. And she herself talks about the fragments, you know, and how we all are amassing this data, right? This data from our lives are getting recorded. They're getting recorded by the authorities out there, by the government. We ourselves are recording them. And I love that quote from Kierkegaard, life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived in forward. So, you know, we all do that. I certainly, for myself, having studied psychology and sociology, it's always digging through the past in a way and trying to make sense of it and trying to understand and bring certain things to light in a way that help me make sense of my present and potentially my future. And it's the same thing with documentary film. Trying to, particularly obviously a historical type of documentary, trying to make sense of the past through digging around and making associations of the past, trying to figure out cause and effect, trying to highlight key moments, emotional moments, and create a story, create a ride for the audience, something that they can connect together. I just love what Anderson did, the connection between 9/11 and this realization of the sky, and then with her dog and the hawks coming down upon the dog, Lolabelle, and realizing that it's not just the land and what's in front and the path and the grass and the dirt and the trees that Lolabelle has to be sensitive of and watch. It's the sky now. And that New Yorkers and we ourselves have to beware of the sky. It's all around now. And we don't know where things are going to come from. And I wonder, you know, too, if maybe religion, maybe that was, you know, something maybe a little bit more present, you know, in times of the past, and maybe even today's circumstances and situations have brought those ideas more to the forefront. But I just love that weaving of those ideas and those moments and those observations together, something so kind of, in a sense, you know, every day and animalistic with something on a much broader and international scale. But still for Anderson lived in the everyday as she herself was a resident of New York. So point of view, perspective, philosophy, ideas, weaving together a personal truth into a greater meaning. Just like we started off with talking about with fragments and ideas, we make sense from the fragments. That's really all we can do. And we're asked to do it more and more and more. The more we have, maybe the less sense any of this really does mean, but we do our best to make meaning of it. Story packages reality into comprehensible, meaningful experience with the clutter stripped away. So that's my job, I feel like, as an editor. I take all this material, usually, you know, hundreds of hours of material, and try to strip away the clutter, try to make narrative sense out of that material, try to give it purpose and meaning, try to tell it in three acts and give people a journey that they can connect with, that they can feel, that they can feel, you know, and that they can express in their own way, you know, through their own emotions and through the conversations they have after they see it, maybe in their own work and their own everyday existence. So I don't know, I'm looking at this next chapter of my life and my work life, my career, where it's going, where it's headed, trying to make sense of it. Maybe I'm walking a little bit through those Northern California hills, or maybe I'm on that canoe adrift, paddling away. Right now, it's a bit of a slower time and thinking about things, and I love it. It's a great time to kind of imagine what things can be, you know, what's the next step or in the next chapter in this journey, and making sense out of the things that I'm looking at, reading, the experiences that I'm having, being able to live those experiences, and and weave those into my next chapter, my next decisions, just like I do for other people when I help make their films for them. So it's kind of a fun time and a fun chapter in my own life. And, you know, one, I think that we as humans, we all share, you know, we try to make meaning of our everyday reality, and we make the best decisions that we can. And it feels good when we connect with other people and other situations and other stories that resonate and we can identify with. And it helps us tell our own stories. It helps us make those choices and decisions that are in front of us and gives us purpose and meaning for the next chapter in our lives. You know, why do we watch films? Why do we watch movies? Why is it such an important part of our lives? And I think it's to entertain, obviously, to escape a little bit, but it's to connect and to help us make sense of our own lives. How do we get through those fragments? How do we make sense of them? You know, our brain uses dualities to make sense of the world. So too do stories simplify and give meaning and insight to our lives and existence. Story is the extraction of cause and effect threads from the chaotic, complex, layered, branching nexus of activity that is the stuff of living. So who's that? What's going to be that next story that's going to come out of the mire of the mass of hours of footage? What's that next journey? How are we going to make sense of it? How do we as filmmakers, what do we decide? How do we even decide what stories we're going to tell? And take the camera, pick it up, get those interviews, frame it, gather those images, bring that into a whole that we can present to an audience and share with the world. You know, right now, for me personally, I've had this idea of telling a story of my high school experience, and I've thought about that for many years. And one of the most powerful things that keeps coming to me is the music from the 80s, particularly the early to mid 80s. It's very important time for me personally. And I'll, you know, whatever on the radio station, some song will come on and it'll just take me right back. Like on the way here, actually New Order came on and I was just like taken right back to that time. And that music was like such a music of release, of dance, of expression, of freedom, of just total joy and, you know, not caring about anything and just kind of going for it. And there's all kinds of moments and emotions that I connect with, and that coming of age type of time in all of our lives and creating identity. And I think that I'm just drawn to that right now. Maybe it's because I'm in this next chapter moment, or maybe I'm actually supposed to make something with this material. I don't know. But lately, I've finally, instead of just having these reveries and ideas, I've actually started to commit some of them to paper. And right now this film is taking a shape of a musical, which is definitely different from documentary. Although I will have to say the first documentary I ever edited, Click Me Darling, was a musical documentary, which was absolutely fantastic. I don't know if I've ever seen another one, but if there's any others out there, I definitely want to hear from any listeners that are out there. I would love to watch another musical documentary. It was super fun to make this. But that's the form it's taking right now. Maybe not something so obvious as musical theater, but something maybe a little bit different. But that's the form it's taking. And I'm going to continue to write, continue to think about it, continue to think about the subject matter. You know, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and it was the early to mid-80s, and that was definitely a very specific time in our society, a very specific time in the Catholic Church, and I think, you know, obviously for me personally, a very meaningful time, one where I did come of age, and it was a time of experimentation, as it is for all young people. But it had its own unique kinds of experiences, feelings, thoughts, emotions that very much textured by the place where I grew up and the time where I grew up. And that's what we have. We have this moment. We have this moment in time. We have this place that we're living in, and we have the experiences we're having. And I hope you all, filmmakers, budding filmmakers out there, lovers of documentary, weave those fragments, tell those stories. Hope you guys enjoyed this session of Doc Talk, and I look forward to speaking with you in a month. All right, guys, take it easy. Bye-bye.